reading is from an unpublished book entitled Ah Puk Is Here. Ah Puk is the Mayan god of death, but unlike the medieval Christian conception of death, Ah Puk was not regarded by the Mayans as purely negative and destructive, but simply as a stage of life making way for rebirth and regeneration. This book concerns an American billionaire who is obsessed by a desire for immortality. He discovers lost Mayan books containing some of the basic secrets of life and death, and uses this knowledge to set up a rather ill-advised control machine. Train whistle, train in lunar landscape of northern Mexico. Cut to Mr. Hart's private car, books spread out on a table. He is reading the books laboriously from a Spanish key. Now here's the young corn god turning into death. When I die, I become death. Death is the seed from which I grow. Now this dying to produce oneself sounds awfully hit and miss to canny young Hart. Obsessed by his desire for immortality, he does not grasp the full significance of this simple survival formula, nor the seeds of disaster it contains. Mr. Hart certainly does not think of himself as a Christian, yet all his thinking is formed by Western Christianity. He thinks in either or, that is, one God terms. He is looking for the secrets of fear and death. Must be one thing or the other, he tells himself. It's all very simple. The priests became death, and therefore they could not die. Can't leave any loose ends trailing about. At dawn, death came to the hut. The youth tried to face him and hurl a magic object. He almost succeeded, for death was old and tired. The weakness of death in this passage alarms him. Perhaps the priests, postulating all those millions of years in which they had existed, killed themselves with old age. Mr. Hart is not really an intelligent man. He does not at this point even guess the real reason for these expeditions into remote past time. The priests made calculations on their calendar dating back 400 million years. Why? Mr. Hart will find out in time. He will find out that death needs time. Death needs time like a junkie needs junk. And what does death need time for? The answer is so simple. Death needs time for what it kills to grow in, for Ah Puk's sweet sake. You stupid, vulgar, greedy, ugly American death sucker. Like this. Death walks out into the field and kills the young corn god. The young corn god becomes a death seed from which another young corn god will grow. Birth and death in all its rich variety of an old outhouse. However, there is always more death than growth, even in the simplest terms of soil exhaustion. Every time you kill the young corn god, life goes out of him. The seed grows slower. The seed loses vitality. The corn god looks like a soulless zombie. And finally, the seed does not grow. No time for death. So death has to travel. Death takes the young corn god back to a time when he hasn't been hit so often he is punch drunk. Back to his youth. Back, back, back. Clickety, clickety, clack. Back to the Garden of Eden. Sure, death will burn that down too. The Mayan priests made these expeditions into past time because they had burned down present time. Mayan scholars have wondered why they did not make more calculations into future time. They were overdrawn, checks bounced, nothing and nobody there. Now, this did not happen right away. You don't get hooked on the first shot, and even when you are hooked, you can control it for a while, maybe stay on the same dose. But picture yourself on a junkie on heroin for several thousand years. Control that habit? So he goes back to the time when his habit was manageable. And what gets out of hand there, he goes further back. Look at the Mayan pantheon and the calendar, and you will see that the Mayans, as experienced vampires and time junkies, were keenly aware of this impasse and took what precautions they could to avoid it by balancing the gods of life and death. Not as Mr. Hart's accounts are balanced on an either-or basis, but through a series of transitional shadings. In the transitional forms of death, death to some extent identifies with the man he kills and shares his death. Now this seems very subversive to Mr. Hart, who never identifies with his victim. To do so would put him in danger of becoming a victim himself. Yet at some point, death must take this risk. Death must become immortal and die in order to be reborn. Hart is not willing to take this risk. He wants to be death, but he will not know death. Death will not serve a stranger who cannot prove his title. A gringo who fears the very word and sets up a house rule that the word death may not be pronounced in his presence. Hart cannot read the Mayan books. He is reading them as one who reads Moby Dick to find out about whaling and to hell with Captain Ahab and the white whale. What is written there, long dormant, is now a virulent strain of virus, waiting to escape, to leap from the pages and infect millions of human hosts.
Thank you.
heart is not willing to take this risk. He wants to be death, but he will not know death. Death will not serve a stranger who cannot prove his title. A gringo who fears the very word and sets up a house rule that the word death may not be pronounced in his presence. You stupid, vulgar, greedy, ugly American death sucker. Mr. Hart, who would be death, does not know to whom he is a speak. He intends to occupy the space of Hunab-Ku in the Mayan pantheon. Hunab-Ku, the one divine, of him no statue or picture was made, for he was incorporeal and invisible. He was, in short, the operator of the control machine, and in consequence did not include himself as data. However, having reprogrammed the machine to eliminate the troublesome good gods and those of ambiguous allegiance, Mr. Hart will soon encounter an acute time shortage. Death, now freed from all control, will use up all the time, and any control machine needs time. Yes, Mr. Hart, the Mayans ran it into the ground too. They didn't do it as quick as you will, or cut themselves off with a habit as hoggish as yours. At this point, I put some questions to control. A word about this control. Some years ago in London, I contacted two computer programmers who purported to represent something that calls itself control, allegedly from the planet Venus. Control will answer any question for $1. You give your question to the programmers who feed it into a computer some way, and out comes the answer. So these are the actual questions that I sent in with my dollars and the answers I got back from Control, whoever or whatever Control may or may not be. Question. If Control's control is absolute, why does control need to control? Answer. Control needs time. Exactly. Control needs time in which to exercise control, just as death needs time in which to kill. If death killed everyone at birth, or control installed electrodes in their brains at birth, there would be no time left in which to kill or control. Question. Is control controlled by its need to control? Answer, yes. Question. Why does control need humans, as you call them? Your knowledge of the local dialects leaves literacy to be desired. Answer, wait. Wait. Time, a landing field. The Mayans understood this very well. Mr. Hart does not. He thinks in terms of losers and winners. He will be a winner. He will take it all. Last take, Mr. Hart's deserted, ruined mansion, graffiti on the walls. Apuk was here. Here lived a stupid, vulgar son of a bitch who thought he could hire death as a company cop.
Miss Meredith, it's Annie.
She's terribly sick.
Did you call the doctor?
Yes, he'll be right over. And she wants the minister, too.
I hate to dispute you, Miss Laura.
Oh, Annie, don't talk.
I've got to talk.
I've got to. Oh, please, please, not now.
You stop crying.
But I...
No, listen to me.
All right, I'm listening.
When my bills are all paid, I want everything that's left to go to Sarah Jane.
Of course.
Mr. Steve.
Yes, Annie.
Find her, Mr. Steve. Find her.
I will. You may be sure I will.
Thank you. Miss Laura, just tell her. Tell her I know I was selfish. And if I loved her too much, I'm sorry. But I didn't mean to cause her any trouble. She was all I had. Tell her, Miss Laura.
Oh, please,
promise me. Promise me.
I promise.
My pearl necklace.
Yes.
I want you to give it to Susie for her wedding. Give her a real bridey wedding with all the fixings. Our wedding day. And the day we die.
Annie, Annie, darling.
There's no cause to cry. Reverend.
Yes, Annie.
Oh, I'd like for your wife to have my fur scarf. She always admired that fur. She never believed me when I said it was genuine mink.
She did, Annie. She did.
Oh, please, you don't have to.
And I want Mr. McKinney to have a nice, clean $50 bill.
Mr. McKinney?
The milkman at the old Coldwater flat. He was so nice and understanding about the bill. I always send him a little something at Christmas time in both our names.
You've been so good.
Sure hope you're right, Miss Laura. I'd like to be standing with the lambs and not with the goats on Judgment Day. And my funeral. Mr. Steve, you'll find what I want in the drawer over there.
Got it, Annie.
I want to go the way I planned. Especially the four white horses. And a grand plan. No mourning, but proud and high-stepping. Like I was gone to glory.
No, I won't listen. There isn't going to be any funeral. Not for a long, long time. You can't leave me. I won't let you.
I'm just tired, Miss Laura. Awfully tired.
Annie! Annie! No!
What we still don't know, Peter, is how you and the others got here.
Actually, Eustace, there's not much to tell. Edmund and I were standing on the station platform. Then we saw you waving out of the window.
I remember thinking the train was taking the bend too fast.
What happened then?
Well, it's not very easy to describe, is it, Ed?
Well, not very. It wasn't at all like the other time when we were pulled out of our own world by magic. There was a frightful roar and something hit me with a bang. But it didn't hurt. And I felt not so much scared as, well, as excited. And I felt very light. And then, then we were here.
It all happened so quick. But it was much the same for us in the railway carriage.
Yeah, the only difference, I suspect, was that I think Polly and I chiefly felt that we'd been unstiffened.
What does that mean, Lady Polly, unstiffened?
Well, you youngsters won't understand, but we stopped feeling old.
And what's been happening since you got here?
Well, for a long time, at least I suppose it was a long time, nothing happened. And then the door opened.
The door?
The door you came in or came out by. Have you forgotten?
For a moment, yes.
It's still here, like a thing you might see in a magic show.
You can walk all the way round it, and it looks just the same on the other side.
Here's a perfectly ordinary wooden door, standing up all by itself. As if it grew here, like a tree.
Yes, this is a great marvel.
Anyway, that's the door you came through with that Calorman 5 minutes ago.
But did I not come in, out of the wood, into the stable? This seems to be a door leading from nowhere to nowhere.
Well, it looks like that if you walk around it. But put your eye to that place where there's a crack between two of the planks and look through. Oh.
No, I can't see anything. Just blackness.
You have to wait till your eyes get used to it.
Yes. Yes, yeah, I can see something. Something glowing. Dull red.
That must be what's left of the bonfire on Stable Hill.
And now I can see beyond. Black sky. Stars.
What's going on out there?
I can hear voices. Calormans. They're discussing whether to go in. To come in, I mean. And look for Rishta Tarkhan. It is astonishing. In there, dark, black night. Out here, blue sky, grassy countryside, and all of you.
Your new friends.
It seems, then, that the stable seen from within and the stable seen from outside are two different places.
Yes, its inside is bigger than its outside.
High King Peter, Queen Lucy, my lords and ladies, loyal friends of Narnia, I bid you welcome. And Tyrion, come to me.
Sir.
Well done, last of the kings of Narnia, who stood firm at the darkest hour.
Aslan, will you do something for these poor dwarfs?
Dearest, I will show you both what I can and what I cannot do. Sons of Earth, I am calling you. Do you not hear my voice?
Hear that, lads? That's the gang at the other end of the stables trying to frighten us. Yeah. They do it with a machine of some sort. Don't take any notice.
You see, they will not let us help them. They have chosen cunning instead of belief.
They won't take us in again. The dwarves are for the dwarves.
Their prison is only in their own minds. Yet they are in that prison, and so afraid of being taken in that they cannot be taken out. But come, children, I have other work to do.
There's the young Calorman soldier.
It's Emma.
I like him.
Wait for me here. My son.
I can see that you are great lord and worthy of honor. Your hair is like pure gold, and the brightness of your eyes is like the gold that is liquid in the furnace.
My son,
alas, glorious one, I am no son of yours, but a servant of Tash.
Child, all the service you have ever done to Tash, I count as service done to me.
Lord, is it then true, as the ape said, that you and Tash are one?
It is false. I accept the service which you have done to Tash, not because he and I are one, but because we are opposites. Listen, my child. Tash and I are of such different kinds that I will accept nothing bad that is done in my name, and he will accept nothing good that is done in his name.
But tell me, Lord, is it not possible for someone to do an evil deed in your name?
If any man do an act of cruelty in my name, even if he says the name of Aslan, it is Tash whom he truly serves, and is by Tash that his deed is accepted.
But I have been seeking Tash all my life.
Beloved, unless your desire had been for me, you would not have sought so long and so truly. For all find what they truly seek. Come, let me breathe on you. Now, enjoy this land. Wander in it at peace, but go always further up and further in. My children, follow me back to the door. Kings and queens of Narnia, ladies and lords, you are to witness the final events in the history of this land I made.
To think that we were here at the beginning.
Yes, and here now, at the end.
Now, it is time. Time! Time!
The door has opened.
The bonfire's gone out.
It's all blackness.
Time!
Look, there's a blacker patch of black against the blackness.
It's a figure, a giant. Lifting something to its mouth. A horn. I think it's about to blow a horn.
For many years he lay dreaming. Then his name was Time. Now that he is awake, he will have a new one.
Look! The sky is full of shooting stars.
My stars! I am calling you home! Come!
Dozens of them. Scores. Hundreds.
Pouring to earth.
Like some rain.
There's another patch of darkness, right overhead, growing bigger and bigger, spreading out from the center of the sky.
Perhaps it's a cloud.
No, it's emptiness.
The stars. They are people.
Come to me, my star folk. Come in and welcome.
Now we can see.
My kingdom, mile after mile of Narnian woods.
In a blaze of fierce white starlight.
As if it was floodlit.
Everything but a sharp black shadow.
Our own shadows, too, stretching out before us.
And Aslan's shadow, streaming away to the left.
And a sky that will now be starless forever.
My people of Narnia, I am calling you home. Come.
Listen. Look. Thousands of eyes sparkling in the stars.
They're coming, the creatures of Narnia. Hundreds of thousands of the millions of...
Talking
them.
Beasts, dwarfs, satyrs, fauns, giants, walking trees, gnomons. Men from Arkenland?
Running and racing for dear life. Towards us. Towards Aslan in the doorway.
They'll never get through. Not that many.
I think they will. Look. Either everyone's got smaller or the door's got larger.
It has. It's huge. Towering up into the darkness.
This is another great wonder.
What'll happen when they all come through?
I think not. Something seems to happen to them as they approach Aslan. I mean, look at their eyes. See? They all look Aslan straight in his face. But
you know, I don't think they have a choice about that.
But something happens when they do. Some have a look of fear or hatred. They don't seem to come near the door, but swerve off to the left into Aslan's shadow.
But those others, see? They seem to look in the face of Aslan with love. Maybe they're a little frightened, but they love him, and those ones get to come in at the door.
I must say, there's a lot of odd specimens among them. Look, there's even some of the dwarfs who helped to shoot the talking horses in the last battle.
It doesn't matter. Aslan knows what they're doing. Look, who else is here?
Jewel, my beloved unicorn, you are safe.
And happy to be reunited with you, sire.
Sire!
I come to you having taken my last flight over Narnia.
Farsight.
As for me, I had to make the journey on foot.
Poggin, my faithful dwarf.
There's the horses, and the bear, and the boar, and all those dogs.
And look, friends, here is Runewit alive again. Was there ever a centaur so wise and brave?
Nor a king so worthy of loyalty as your majesty. Now, one and all, heed my words. Further up and further in!
Waters of the deep, arise!
What is that? That long, level line of whiteness coming towards us from the eastern end of the world?
It's the sea. It is. A foaming wall of water.
It was all written, set down on the day Narnia came to birth. The end established at the beginning. And the sea shall rise.
Arise and come.
Many rivers shall come together.
Come together, my rivers.
And the lakes shall join into one.
Join with one another, my lakes.
And then the valleys shall become new lakes.
Lakes, new valleys.
And the hills become islands.
Become islands, new hills.
Until all vanishes beneath the water.
Flood over all.
The sea. It's coming right up to the doorway.
Sun and moon, arise and come.
The sun's rising. Huge. 20 times as big as it ought to be. Dark red. The time giant's turned red. So is the sea. Blood red. I've never seen a sun like that.
Yeah. In a different world. Before Narnia was born.
It's a dying sun.
There's the moon now. Close, very close to the sun. Not the right position at all. And red, red like the sun.
Yet they're destroying the moon to it.
Shooting out great flames of crimson fire.
They're running together into a great burning ball.
Now, make an end!
My reign as king has come to an end.
It does for us all, Your Majesty.
The giant is reaching out his arm, seizing the sun,
squeezing it. Like an oven.
Darkness. It's so cold. Bitter. Icy.
The sea's frozen at our feet. The edges of the door. Covered with icicles.
Peter, High King of Narnia. Shut the door.
Yes, Aslan. The ice. It's hard to pull the door. There.
Peter, on a chain around your neck, you wear a golden key. It will lock the door. Use it now.
It is done.
Good. Follow me. Come further up. Come further in.
So, night falls on Narnia. Lucy, you're not crying. With Aslan ahead and all of us here.
Don't try to stop me, Peter. I am sure Aslan would not. I am sure it is not wrong to mourn for Narnia. Think of all that lies dead and frozen behind that door.
Yes, and I did hope that it might go on forever. I knew our world couldn't. I did think Narnia might.
Lord Diggory and I saw it begin. I did not think we would live to see it die.
Sirs, the ladies do well to weep. See? I do so myself. What world but Narnia have I ever known? It would be a great discourtesy if we did not mourn.
But we must also follow Aslan.
We can't hope to keep up with his pace.
No, he's headed for the west. We'll just have to keep walking westward until we find him.
Best we can.
Who's this?
It's a donkey. He's beautiful. What a lovely silver grey coat he's got.
You know who this is?
Puzzle! I hardly recognised you.
We only ever saw him in the dark.
And most of the time he had that awful lion skin on.
You are a very handsome donkey, Puzzle.
How did you get here?
And where have you been?
Well, I came in at the door the same as everybody else, but I've been, well...
Yes?
Well, I've been trying to keep out of the way. Your way. Aslan's way, as much as I could. I saw him, you see. Aslan, I mean, the lion. And, well, when I saw him, I was so ashamed of all that nonsense about dressing up in that lion's skin that I didn't know how to look anyone in the face. But then, when I saw you all going away westward, I had a mouthful of grass, and, oh, I've never tasted such good grass in all my life.
That's certainly true.
And I plucked up courage to follow. But what I'd do if I really have to meet Aslan, I'm sure I don't know.
You'll find it will be all right when you really do.
And we'll be with you.
Now, we must keep going westward.
Peter, where is this, do you think?
I don't know. It reminds me of somewhere, but I can't give it a name. Could it be somewhere we once stayed for a holiday, when we were very, very small?
Would have to have been a jolly good holiday. I bet there isn't a country like this anywhere in our world. I mean, look at those colours. You couldn't get a blue like the blue on those mountains in our world.
Is this not Aslan's country?
Not like Aslan's country on the top of that mountain beyond the eastern end of the world. Eustace and I have been there.
If you ask me, it's like somewhere in the Narnian world. Look at those mountains ahead, and the big ice mountain beyond them. Surely they're rather like the mountains we used to see from Narnia. The ones up westward, beyond the waterfall.
Like? Why, they're exactly like. And yet they're not like. They're different. They have more colours on them. And they look further away than I remember. And they're more... Oh, I don't know.
More like the real thing.
Kings and queens. From up here I can see it all. From Beaver's Dam to Caer Paravel. Still shining on the edge of the eastern sea. Narnia is not dead. This is Narnia. This is Narnia.
But how can that be? Aslan told us older ones that we should never return to Narnia.
And anyway, we saw it all destroyed and the sun put out.
And it's all so different.
Yeah, but listen. When Aslan said you could never go back to Narnia, he meant the Narnia you were thinking of. The one that had a beginning and an end. But that was not the real Narnia. It was only a shadow or copy of the real Narnia, which has always been here and always will be here. Just as our world is only a shadow or copy of something in Aslan's real world.
If Lord Diggory is right, and I really feel that he is, then, Lucy, you need not mourn over Narnia. All of the old Narnia that mattered, all the dear creatures, have been drawn into the real Narnia through the door.
And, of course, it's different. As different as a real thing is from a shadow, or as waking life is from a dream. I don't know why you all look so surprised. The old philosophers knew all about it. Bless me, what do they teach them at these schools?
I've just realized something.
Realized what, Jules?
The reason why we loved old Narnia is that it sometimes looked a little like this. But now I have come home. I have come home at last. This is my real country. I belong here. This is the land I've been looking for all my life, though I never knew it till now. Come further up. Come further in.
We're running. We're all running. How can I run this fast?
How can I run at all?
Everyone can, you and I.
Even me! But I've got awfully short legs.
Further up and further in.
It's all very well for him. He can fly.
Well, it feels as if we're flying.
This is absolutely crazy, and yet...
Isn't it wonderful? Haven't you noticed something? You can't feel afraid, even if you want to. Try it.
It's true. It's not possible to be afraid.
We are out of Narnia now and up into the western wild. I've never seen these lands before.
I never came here as king.
Nor I. Ah, but we did long ago.
On a flying horse on the very day the world was made.
And it seems to me as if it were only yesterday.
I remember this long lake as blue as turquoise and the smooth green hill, its sides as steep as the sides of a pyramid, and round the very top a green wall. And above the wall, the branches of trees. Like silver and fruit like gold.
We're here.
great golden gates.
There we go in.
Is it right? For us.
Can it be? Reepicheep the Mouse? One of the legendary heroes of Narnia who fought at the Great Battle of Verona and afterwards sailed to the world's end with King Caspian.
Come further up and further in. Come into the garden. Come into the cool of sunlight and shadows.
Mr. Tumnus, after all these years, my first friend in Narnia.
Oh, dearest Lucy, daughter of Eve, let us walk.
I was puzzled by this garden, but I see now. It is like the stable. It is far bigger inside than it was outside.
Of course. The further up and the further in you go, the bigger everything gets.
And it's not really a garden, is it? It can't be, because it has its own woods and sea and mountains, and I know them all.
Well, this is still Narnia.
And more real and more beautiful than the Narnia down below. Just as it was more real and more beautiful than the Narnia outside the stable door. I see. World within world. Narnia within Narnia.
Yes, like an onion. Except that as you go in and in, each circle is larger than the last.
Look! Across there, on that hill beyond the valley, my mother and father, Peter, Edmund, and my parents. I can see them. There, see? Yeah. They can see me waving. Oh, how can we get at them?
That's easy. That country and this country, all the real countries are only spurs jutting out from the great mountains of Aslan. We have only to walk along the ridge, upward and inward, till it joins on. King Frank's horn. We must all go up.
Going up into the mountains.
We are going further up and further in.
Oh, that light ahead. It's getting stronger and stronger.
Welcome. I wish to speak with one of your company. Puzzle the donkey. Is he here?
Yes, Aslan.
Come to me, my child.
Yes, Aslan. Yes, Aslan.
And now, I wish to ask why you do not yet look as happy as I mean you to be.
We're so afraid of being sent away, Aslan. And you have sent us back into our own world so often.
No fear of that. Have you not guessed? There was a real railway accident. Your father and mother and all of you are, as you used to call it in the Shadowlands, dead. The term is over. The holidays have begun. The dream is ended. This is the morning.
As he spoke, he no longer looked to them like a lion. But the things that began to happen after that were so great and beautiful that I cannot write them. And for us, this is the end of all the stories. And we can most truly say that they all lived happily ever after. But for them, for Peter, Edmund, Lucy, Jill, Eustace and the others, it was only the beginning of the real story. All their life in this world and all their adventures in Narnia had only been the cover and the title page. Now, at last, they were beginning chapter one of the great story, which no one on earth has read, which goes on forever, in which every chapter is better than the one before.